Robert Louis Stevenson once wrote, "The most beautiful adventures are not those we go to seek." Would you say that teaching kindergarten in Thailand would qualify as that type of beautiful adventure? Well, I've got an author I'd like you to meet who, at the tender age of 60 and craving adventure, convinced her husband that they should try working abroad. Her heartwarming story offers a unique perspective on contemporary Thailand and introduces readers to an unforgettable cast of characters. Stick around because we're going to learn more about her book and the writing process she followed to create it.
Welcome to A Book Finds You podcast. This week's guest is Diane Seidel. Join us as she shares the inspiration behind her book, along with her writing process, routines, and challenges. And now here's your host, best-selling author, Rob Jalas.
Before her unexpected second act teaching kindergarten in Thailand, today's guest, Diane Seidel, was a climate scientist at NOAA, whose research contributed to the 2007 Nobel Peace Prize-winning Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. Originally from Massachusetts, she now lives in Washington, D.C. area, where she teaches English as a second language and yoga. Her book is Kindergarten at 60, and her award-winning writing has appeared in numerous publications, including Lucky Jefferson, Pen in Hand, The New York Times, and Bethesda Magazine. Happy to have you with us, and welcome to the show, Diane.
Thanks, Rob. It's a pleasure to be here.
Pleasure to have you here. We'll dive right in, and if you've been listening to the show, I think you know the first question I'm about to ask you. And I think we've got a hint on how, but how did this particular book find you?
This book found me on the backs of the COVID-19 pandemic, really. The story that I tell in this book, it's a memoir, it's a true story, and the action takes place over the course of 1 year, March 2019 to March 2020. After our adventure in Thailand during that year, 1 year period, you know what happened in March 2020, and I'm sure all your listeners do too. I had not thought about writing a book about our adventure until we returned, and everything that I hoped to do on my return was not doable, as I'm sure the things that you had hoped to do in March of 2020 were not doable. But I had to find something else to do. So it turned into a writing project.
Right. Did you keep a journal or anything? I mean, did you have a head start when you finally said, you know what, I'm going to go back and I'm going to capture that?
Yeah, I'm not a journal keeper, but I did have material to work from. And what I had to work from was what I called my missives from Thailand. While we were in Thailand, every month or every week, depending on who the recipient was, I sent a missive home for my mother, who was 95 at the time. She got a weekly message. Everybody else got a monthly message. And they were kind of a summary of what had happened since the last missive, with pictures, you know, photos of where we were and people we were encountering. And I tried in those missives to make the story entertaining to the readers. So actually, when we returned and the missive stopped coming, people said, friends and family members said to me, "Oh my gosh, I'm going to miss your missives. You should write a book." And I thought, no. But then I thought, well, maybe. So I started writing, not a book, but I started writing short essays, taking the missives and making compact kind of vignettes, essays about our time in Thailand. And then with a lot of help from a lot of people, professional people, other writers, we can talk more about that if you're interested, those vignettes started to coalesce into a book-like manuscript.
Right. You know, it's funny. You know, I asked you about a journal. You went, "Huh, no, I'm not a journal person." And yet, you were almost, those callbacks and those things, you were almost creating your version of a journal when you really think about it. But we won't call it that because you're not a journal writer. I hear you. But you kind of wrote a schmernal. I mean, you were in a ballpark. And it's one of the reasons why I really encourage writers to think about whatever you want to call it, but it's almost like training as a writer. You don't have to be working on a book or a paper to keep writing. You know, I used to be a runner. I only ran races a few times a year, but I trained for races with runs around the neighborhood. I think sometimes those are the runs around the neighborhood a little bit.
Yeah, for
So,
sure.
yeah, and it bailed and it helped you out. I mean, you had a guide in a sense to start working from.
Yeah, it helped me out not only in terms of memory, remembering the details of things, but even, word choice and how to cast the story. As I said, I tried to bring out the humor, the exoticism isn't the right word. That's a little bit not looked on kindly these days, but it was a very different life from what I was leaving at home. And so it wasn't, in my mind, exotic, if you'll forgive that. And the details of what made it so were captured there. I think if I had waited even a few months, I would have forgotten those details. And so having that just as something to mine was nice. The other thing that was nice about this was that I tell the story about teaching in Thailand, but I was actually co-teaching in Thailand with my husband, and he was stuck at home with me during the pandemic too. This was an unusual situation for us. We never spent so much time together at home or in Thailand, and his memory was a good one to tap as well, because he and wasn't always exactly the same, but that was something to work with.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that. That was incredibly fortunate when you think about it. You had, in a sense, two subject matter experts kind of on different angles, and you didn't even know it. You know, Diane, you are a classic example of why we title the show What We Do. A book typically finds us. You didn't go there thinking, I'm going to go to Thailand, teach kindergarten, and write a book about it. No, you didn't find it, it found you. And I just think that, you know, hearing you say that kind of makes me smile because you'd be shocked at how many writers really have similar stories. Nobody just says, woke up and said, book day. It just doesn't work that way. We want to write a book. We probably you and I have both bumped into people who said, I've always dreamt of writing a book. The problem is the next question when you go, well, what about? I don't know that yet. And until it finds you, it's an exercise that's can be very frustrating because you can't just grind out something. You got to have a calling of some sort, and you had a calling. Okay, all right. You know, most of us, we're going to leave. You've got more than one book, right?
Nope, this is my
Oh, that's your
debut book
first
and my
book.
only book. Yeah, so
Wow,
this was a miracle, really.
it's a miracle, baby.
It found me, and I had the time to
Right.
focus on the craft and to
Right.
focus on learning the writing craft. Rob, I thought I knew how to write. I, as you said in the intro, I was a scientist. I wrote a lot during my career, and people would come to me for help with their articles, and I would help edit things. But I learned really quickly after taking just one creative writing course, I knew how to put sentences together, but I didn't know how to put a story together. I didn't know how to write a story that would make you want to read that story that you might, turn to from page one to page two on. And I had a lot to learn. I was super lucky both to have the time to put into that, and that there are resources here in Maryland through the Maryland Writers Association. I leaned a lot on the Writers Center in Bethesda, Maryland, for courses, for connections with critique groups, for editors that would help me develop the story. Yeah, the story found me, but then I also had to find help, and I wasn't ashamed to say that I needed help. I once I decided I was writing this, I wanted it to be the best book I could do, the best book I could write. And for me, that meant reaching out. And
Yeah.
I'm really glad I did.
Well, and again, you know, that's what I love about this show. I hope that when people are listening, they understand that we're carving into different people's writing style and system and process. And it's rare I interview an author that says, "Oh, I just started writing and wrote a book." You actually went out there and took a class, and their class is available. As a Writer Center instructor, I can tell you the Writer Center is a fabulous resource, and learning now as I am about the Maryland Writers Association, tremendous resources. But let's make a deal, everybody. You don't have to just say, well, nobody ever told me I was an author, so I can't be one. You start with a passion. You start with a goal and an idea, and then don't be afraid to reach out for help. There's a lot of resources, and they're for we Marylanders and people in the Washington metropolitan area, great resources, virtual and live. So good. Glad you brought that up, because I think a lot of people say, I don't know if I'm capable. Of course you're capable. You've got your own authentic voice, but you still need some process behaviors and tactics. And that's what the instructors give us. So good for you. All right, let's carve into your writing routine a little bit. When you started working on this, did you have a daily writing routine, or did you have a page count, a word count? How did you kind of go about that routine?
Well, when I was in classes, and I didn't take just one, classes or workshops, I was writing bits for submission on that deadline. But even after, during times when I wasn't enrolled in something like that, I did have a writing routine. It was actually part of my daily routine. You mentioned that I teach yoga. I am a practitioner as well. For years now, and since finishing the book as well, I wake up, I practice, I do my yoga practice. So that gets me started. You know, depending on the weather and other things, I might do some other kind of exercise too, and have breakfast, and then I write. Then I was writing, okay? This book was written during the time when we weren't going out. We'd walk around the neighborhood and cross the street if we encountered people, if you recall.
Right.
Ran
to the hills, yeah.
So being at home was fine, and I'm retired from, you know, my career. So I had the day to parse out. And yeah, I would spend a couple hours writing each morning. I'm more productive in the morning. I'm definitely a morning person. So no, I didn't have a page count goal. But I did kind of know when I felt I had put something down that I was moderately happy with, or at least that I done enough work, even if I was frustrated that day, that I had put in a good enough effort that then I could, you know, put it aside until tomorrow. So yes, for me, discipline was important, but I also had the luxury to have that discipline given my retired status and also the pandemic, which I feel like this project was a silver lining for me of the pandemic. It kept me safe inside all by myself, well, not all by myself, but, you know, without interacting with other people in person, and also distracted from really what was a horrible, scary situation. Right. So I was immersing myself in the story I had just lived and trying to bring out the positive aspects of that story to put me in another space to relive a period that was pre-pandemic. Pretty much pre-pandemic. There is part of the story that explains when the pandemic came to Thailand, which happened before it came to the United States. It was the first instance outside China was in Thailand, not far from where we were living and teaching.
Right. Now, I poked you once on this. I'll poke you one more time. Any thoughts now that you've taken a bite of the apple and you've joined the authors club? I had somebody once say, you write one book, you're an author. You write two books, you're a writer.
Oh, I heard a different version of that. So I heard you write something, whether it's an essay or a poem or a book, you're a writer. But you get it published, you're an author. Right. So I thought that was the transom to go over that. You found a publisher and the book's out in print, then you're an author. But whatever, yes. I do continue to write, but I'm not working on a book-length manuscript. I'm writing essays. I'm submitting them to literary journals. I'm mostly getting rejected from journals. But, you know, that was
process.
I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
I learned enough about the craft to want to learn more. I made friends in the writing community that I want to stay connected with. And like my friends in my critique group, I don't want to leave them, which means I need to occasionally submit something to the critique group. It means I have to write something. So all of this has become a whole new slice of my life that didn't exist before this book.
Yeah. You said something that was interesting to me, just in terms of, you know, the rejections. I wish people listening also would understand that that's actually part of being a writer and part of being an author. The rejections, they're not always the kindest rejections, but it's just part of the process. It's one of those scenarios where if you don't quit, you can win this battle. And now my first book came out in 93. We didn't really even have a self-publishing arm back then. Now there's, so you can go conventional, you can go hybrid, you can self-publish, you can publish it right on Amazon if you feel like. So there's so many avenues that I wish people would understand that you're not, the hardest part is getting that manuscript done. Stop being distracted about what happens next. What happens next is you'll be rejected a lot, and then somebody's going to love that book. But you're in control of that situation. You know, I'm a Maryland guy, and I'm University of Maryland alum, and was never really a Dean Smith fan from way back when. But Dean Smith had a quote, I think I've got it right, where he said, "You can't approach every game as life and death." Every situation, like he said, to begin with, you'll be dead a lot. And I think sometimes people fear this type of project because they fear that rejection. And I'm smiling when I say this, because what if I could tell you, I can guarantee you, you write it, it'll get published. It's just a matter of how, it's a matter of who, but it will get done. So let's not let those rejections scare us.
Actually, Rob, along just following up, there's a piece that I wrote. It appears in Pen in Hand, the MWA Journal. I think the title is How I Learned to Stop Moping and Celebrate Rejection. Yeah. It's about how my first reaction to rejection, my eventual becoming used to the whole thing, my rationalizations about rejection, and then realizing that there was some value to it, that, you know, you don't always get feedback. In fact, mostly I didn't get any feedback in particular. But when you do, it can be useful in doing revisions. And anyhow, that what you just said, it makes you not be invested in what other people think. What you're invested in is your own writing. And if someone likes it enough to publish it, great. But if not, it's still your product and you can still be proud of it. So yeah, if people are interested, I think that came out in 2023 in Pen in Hand.
Excellent. Okay. Well, look that one up and spell your last name. The first name isn't easy either, by the way. D-I-A-N. Okay. It stops right there. And spell your last name.
It's S like Sam, E-I-D like David, E-L, Seidel.
Good. Okay. So now we know, if you want to look that one up, you've got the name that you're looking for. And one last thing, and I'll jump off this, but it's ironic that that might not be the right word here, but it's puzzling to me that a lot of people will have sort of their dreams crushed because they're looking for an agent and they can't find an agent. And I'm here to tell you, folks, between the two of us in this podcast, we've got 7 books out, and I, for one, have never had an agent. All conventional books, conventionally published. It's much harder to find an agent than it is a publisher. Please remember that. And the rejections are much more brutal from agents than they are from publishers. Please remember that too. So I'm not trying to put the agents out of work. I'm telling you, they must be exhausted, but that's a very tough industry. Problem is, Diane, it scares people off right out of the gate because they're really getting beat up by the lack of communication, no communication from the agents, and they put that manuscript in a drawer. Get it out of the drawer. Forget about the agent right now. Go sell a million copies. You'll find agents, I promise. And let's just work on getting that book published. Okay, great. How about, did you ever have to battle writer's block while you were working on that book?
Probably. I'm sure there were days when nothing was coming. I don't really remember the feeling of that. I'm sure I also didn't take it as hard as maybe some other people do. I wasn't writing the book to make a lot of money. I'm sure I will never make a lot of money from this book. So it didn't frustrate me so much as if I was writing on deadline or I really had to produce here. I think I knew that it came with the territory, that some days were better than other days. I think, I'm a debut author, but I'm not a young author. The title of the book is Kindergarten at 60. That's when the action takes place. I was a little bit older than that when I started writing. I think I was old enough to know that you have good days and you have bad days at work, and you have productive days and less productive ways. And you just have to accept that and roll with it and make the most out of your good days.
Right. Well said. Did you use an outline when you wrote that book? Create a full outline?
I kind of did. The book is mostly sequential. The story starts at a given moment in time and then ends, with the exception that there's a few flashbacks. So it's a memoir. It mostly covers this year, but I do flash back to my youth, my childhood, my young adulthood, sort of seeing, comparing myself to the little children that we were teaching, comparing myself to our colleagues, other teachers in our school who were a generation younger than me. So there are flashbacks there. The most brilliant flashback, though, is at the beginning of the book, and this was the suggestion from one of the wonderful editors that I worked with, who suggested moving a chapter from the middle of the book to the front because she felt, and actually I agree, that it was really one of the more powerful chapters in the book. Start there and then tell the story. How did we get there? And then move on. So in terms of outline, to get back to your question, in terms of outline, I mostly wanted to just tell the arc of the whole adventure, and I had kind of points, particular episodes I wanted to touch on. Mostly they're in the order in which they occurred. There wasn't a lot of development of outline for this. The story evolves as it did in real life,
Okay,
pretty much.
good. All right, so you just heard an author that really isn't battling there. If you are battling there, one, an outline is a good move. Not necessarily for what you were writing, Diane, but when we're writing about, I happen to write in the business world, okay, business books, but writing a fictional book, sometimes a really fleshed out outline can psychologically keep you from going too low into those writer blocks as that kind of writer depression, because at least you got a big picture of what's going on. Yours was unique. You clearly had a big picture. You're telling the story of what actually happened to you. The second thing is, I was poking you a little bit about your writing process. Not for everybody. Everybody has their own writing process. But if you are given to struggling, give yourself a weekly goal. I'm not a page count guy, I'm a word count person, meaning I don't know, but we double space and use big fonts. And what does that mean? Word counts don't lie, and publishers, that's what they're looking for. They don't really care how many pages it is, they want to know how many words it is. But I meet some people who say, I will write 3 pages a day or whatever. It's like, yeah, some days it's not going to be there, but can we get 6 in a week? And if you have a bad Tuesday, go outside, play a little pickleball, come back and try it on Wednesday, But so give yourself a little grace, a little bit of wiggle room. Writing just, you can't manufacture it the same way every day. So just a couple of thoughts bouncing back at you for those that struggle a little bit with the block that scares people. Block's scary. All right, let's push you. We're coming down the home stretch. Let's talk a little bit about marketing, and don't wince. I already heard the speech about, which I hear from a lot of authors, about, I didn't write the book to make money. I actually do write books to make money, and they don't make a lot of money. What they do is they open doors, they open avenues. So there are different ways. It's not necessarily a royalty business. It's where, what can that book, what door can the book open? But the reason why I'm asking about marketing is I think sometimes we go all in on the writing and we get a little bit tired when it comes to marketing. So I'm pushing you a little bit here.
No,
Give me
it's a
a
very,
Yeah, give me a marketing idea, something that you've done you did that today. Today is a marketing move for you. I'm
It is.
applauding you, right? Folks, get on some podcasts, get that story out. Tell me some other marketing moves you thought about or maybe tried.
Yeah, well, I actually hired a publicist to help me with this. The publisher that published my book, Apprentice House Press, doesn't really take books to the marketing and publicity part of the arrangement. So I hired a separate publicist, and that team had tons of good ideas for how to get the book in the world. I did want the book to be out in the world. I was proud of my book. I was just delighted with it. I still am. And I want readers to share the book with me. It's not so much the finances of it, the royalties are not going to be big, but I'm as happy if somebody checks my book out of a public library and I see no royalties from that as if they buy their book and read it once and it sits on their shelf. So I have done a bunch to try to market the book. I've done a number of other podcasts, and each podcast has a different little niche audience. I did a podcast for teachers of English abroad, and another one for digital nomads, and another one for people in retirement, sort of finding yourself in retirement. And here we are, speaking to the writing community. So each podcast is a different opportunity to open up your story to a new slice of potential readers. So that was fun. Book launch party, which I did at the Writers Center, my favorite place. I
As
was
did
very
I. Great place to launch a book, folks.
grateful.
Great place to, very reasonable too.
Yeah,
They really want to help.
you invite your friends, but it's open to the public, so people can wander in off the street and have a slice of cake with you and learn about your book. We tried to get reviews in publications, some more successfully than others, so that was something. Lately, I've been doing talks at libraries, and also I've done a number of talks for councils on aging in different communities. My book speaks to sort of second act stories and what you can do with your retirement years. So I found that senior citizens' homes or programs that are geared toward retirees, they're always happy to have yet another speaker come in and entertain with their story. And so I try to make those fun. And yeah, what other marketing things?
I got to
Nothing.
tell you, I have to tell you something, Diane. You've already won the award. We're about 15, 16 shows in. You have won the award for the best marketing person I have interviewed on this show. And you had me at publicist, by the way. Folks, I had to shorten Diane's bio a bit, and I shortened it by all the publications that this book has appeared in. And those don't they don't typically just come out of the woodwork. You need to reach out. You need to approach them. That's what a publicist frequently can do. So, but I had a su I suspected you were doing something because there were just way too many publications there that I was seeing.
Well, one thing I will say though, Rob, so my publicist somewhat encouraged me to. So there were different services that their team provided, and it was like a menu you pick and choose. One of them was social media presence, and I'm not as active in social media for various reasons. I never have been, but I thought, well, that's the way people get the word out these days, so I'm going to let them go ahead with it. And they did go ahead with it for about 6 months, and then the contract ended, and it was up to me to continue. Well, you know where I'm headed here. I didn't continue. It wasn't my thing. We started this when Twitter existed, and then Twitter became something I didn't want to get involved with. The reason I tell this story is because the lesson that I learned was that was not a good path for me. It was not an area of engagement that I was comfortable with. I wasn't going to continue with it so much. And I made an investment of time and money that probably wasn't worthwhile. So I guess I'd encourage other people to think hard about choosing the kind of marketing methods, publicity methods that make sense to you and who you are as a person. Because if it's not feeling right to you, probably aren't going to be successful with it.
I have a list of publicists that I kind of maintain just as a resource for people, et cetera, that have been vetted out. Most of them won't cross over. In other words, most of them will be specialists in social media, or specialists in print media, or specialists in television and radio. All of them will be going after the podcast typically. So you provide a really valuable information there, Diane, to remind people that there's a pitch going on. They actually make money for a living. So they're going to want your business as long as you can pay their invoice. So you're going to have to vet them out a little bit. And I love where you're going, which is, let's start with which of the many avenues feels comfortable for you. I had a publicist real fast that said to me, what are you looking for? I said, well, I don't know. She said, would you like to be on the Today Show? And I said, oh, I'd love to be on the Today Show. She said, I can get you on the Today Show. She said, but let me go back. I'm looking at my notes. Your goal was to sell books. I said, that's my number one goal. Okay, well, then why are you going on the Today Show? And I said, well, my friends and family and my 4 minutes of Today Show. Then if that's your goal, there are publicists that can get you there. If your goal is to sell books, it's a whole different story. If your goal, one size doesn't fit all with these publicists, and they're not inexpensive. So thank you for that cautionary tale of they're all going to be happy to take your money. Make sure they're fitting what you're looking for. And you can ask around.
It's hard for a debut author who doesn't have any experience with this whole world of publishing to know what makes sense. What should you be comfortable for? What waters should you test without being too afraid that you're going to drown or fall through the ice? So it's very easy to get pulled into doing things or trying things that don't really make sense for you. And if it's not a fiasco, so you live and learn. You realize, I realized that the social media part of the picture, it wasn't my thing. But okay, I learned that lesson.
Good. Oh, well, you got two awards. You're probably one of my longest podcasts as well. And people ask me, how long does the podcast go for? And I mumble in my breath, as long as it's interesting. It's been very interesting, Diane. You're really you've got your hand in a lot of different areas there for a first-time author. And that's why I assumed you had more books. It's a compliment to you. You came up the ramp very quickly in terms of the lessons you've learned. And I appreciate you sharing them with us today. How do people get a hold of you?
Well, I have a website. It's www.dianseidel.com. Book information is there. There's information there about events coming up. There are a few locally in the DC area, and some of my other activities besides writing. I'd love for people to reach out. If you read the book, whether you buy it or get it out of your library or listen to the audiobook, I'd love to hear your feedback, positive, negative, or in between. I'd love to hear from readers. So thank you very much, Rob, for doing this. It's been a real pleasure.
It's been a pleasure as well. And just a footnote, if you see my book in the library, don't check it out and go get it at the bookstore. go ahead and check it out.
Rob wants to sell books. I want readers. That's okay.
That's right. I want to sell books. There we go. And that's what we mean. Every author has their own goal. All right, Diane. Real pleasure. And thank you so much for being on the show.
I'm going to say goodbye and thank you in Thai because the book is about Thailand. So I'm going to say, Rob, Sawadika Kapkunka.
And all I'm doing is bowing, but you can't see me, folks.
That's all good. That's all you got to do, okay?
Okay. Well, we'll do it again as well as we can next time, everybody. Until then, stay safe.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed today's guest author, we'd love you to rate, review, and share this episode with others. If you'd like more information on today's guest or the Maryland Writers Association, please visit our website at marylandwriters.org. You can also find out about the history of the Maryland Writers Association by listening to our first podcast, Episode 0.